Okay, and we're live.
And we are live. Hello, everyone. My name's James Olson.
I'm Travis Noel.
And welcome to Pacific Sound Radio.
Mm-hmm. Our Save On Radio debut.
All right.
Okay, now how do we actually start? That's the thing.
Pardon?
We just start talking.
Yeah. Is it recording as well?
Yeah.
Okay,
it's recording.
Great.
It's
awesome.
Live. There's dots on the screen, which is a good sign, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think so. Well, that's... Basically what they said. It's like the green dots are going, then it's...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Hello, can you hear us? Good.
Excellent. Okay. All right, so... And then the theme song.
Are we talking about ourselves first?
Sure, we'll do a brief intro about ourselves.
Who we are?
Yeah. So, again, this is James speaking. I've been writing about music for at least 6 years. I started writing for CITR's Discorder magazine when I was at UBC, and then I migrated over to Beatroot a few years later.
Mm-hmm.
I've been the local music section editor for Beatroot since this past summer, and currently I play bass in a band called Impurities, featuring Duncan Lee, who drums for another local band called The Cut Losses.
That's pretty cool. I think so.
Yeah. How about you, Travis? It's been an intro from you.
Okay, well, I graduated from BCIT's Radio Arts and Entertainment program a couple years ago, and weird connection with Duncan Lee. I used to practice kung fu with him, and him and his brother.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah, it's so. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I lived with an old Asian man for a while. You know, well, he lived with us. And anyway,
was his name Mr. Miyagi?
No, it was Paul. Short for Paul Pian. Anyway, he opened up a little kung fu school on a barn, kind of on the property we rented, and, you know, that's how I met Duncan and his brother Cam, and it was pretty cool. And, you know, I've just been sort of...
I still don't know whether you're being sarcastic or not.
I am being 100% serious. This is how I met Duncan. I think he was in elementary school at the time. Pretty cool.
Okay, I'm going to have to ask him about that.
Yeah, you know, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So... And, you know, it's just the Vancouver music scene and me have been kind of like side by side, but not really intertwining.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm excited to be a part of it.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. So today on the episode, we have...
Firstly, we're going to be talking to another Save On Radio host, Ilya.
Hello. What's up, guys?
With his talking about his art show, Creative Theory. And then we will be bringing on Mark Lingelbach from Lamb's Breath.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a pretty fun show. And I guess we'll just play our intro now.
Yes.
All right.
All right. 3, 2, 1.
Sound
Radio.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, and we're back. Back from that really, really long pause we had there.
Good to have you on, Ilya. How did your first episode go?
Hey, guys. Yeah, went really well. It's a little bit... it's super exciting, but it's a little... kind of scary to just get going into it, and especially when you're talking about long forum interviews, but otherwise really fun. Honestly, I just can't wait to do more.
It's pretty exciting project. Can you tell us a little bit about Creative Theory?
So Creative Theory podcast, show that brings conversations with visual artists about what their day-to-day is like, how they got to where they got, because, you know, the art path is never really straightforward. Their thoughts on current events in the art world, goals, struggles, and a lot more. Hopefully just conversations that everyone can relate to, because when you see or compare any other creative endeavor, the struggles and these big concepts are always overlapping and reoccurring. So, and actually that's why I'm really looking forward to listening to your guys' show, just because I feel like just overall pursuing something creative, I think we all run into similar issues, challenges, our thoughts may connect. And then I think that's why, once again, I think this space is so cool for all of us to have these spaces for conversations.
Yeah, no, it's a really awesome, cool project that Savon Meets and Savon Radio and
totally.
Yeah, it's exciting.
Yeah.
So, who's your first guest? Was it a local visual artist?
Yeah, the first guest. His name is Jose Arias. He's a concept artist and designer. He's currently working on a feature film. I used to work with him in a TV animation company, but unfortunately, he left us for bigger, better things. But that was cool. But you know, one thing that I'm sure I'm going to keep running into a lot is this connection between the digital and the traditional art realms. And actually, to be honest, I wonder if there's going to be a similar connection in your guys' podcast. I mean, I don't know if like acoustic and electric sounds are as jarring or as different between these two worlds, would you say?
You mean like electronic elements mixed with acoustic?
Or artists who do electronic music rather than artists who do acoustic music, but they must be able to relate to one another even though their genres are different, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely. I don't know, I'm purely speculating here, but I imagine there's more similarities than differences between someone who's assembling beats for a DJ set and someone who's, you know, writing a song with an acoustic guitar.
Totally. And that's why I think it's so cool that no matter the guest you get, like in my case, it was a digital artist, but as a traditional artist, fine artist, anyone can listen to it. And once again, these conversations could almost be universal, I think, just because once again the art pursuit is something that most people can relate to. So I imagine your audience is going to be very mixed as well, just because it doesn't matter what kind of musicians or artists come in, it's going to be very insightful.
Oh, precisely. Yeah, that's a good chunk of the focus for the show is going to be really emphasizing some of the challenges that are so specific to Vancouver and figuring out through dialogue ways to, at the very least, lessen their impact.
Do you think Vancouver is a tough place for that, arts in general?
It's got its own unique set of challenges. I mean, there's not much that we can do in terms of the geography, simply because, you know, if you're on the East Coast, you've got more cities to visit more easily. But I think when it comes to resolving some of the, I don't want to say factionalism, but the fact that there are kind of little segments of a music scene that's so small, and just trying to bridge those gaps between everybody, I think is really important.
That's very cool.
Encourage more of the community spirit, which exists. I'm not saying it's non-existent, but it's just strengthening and
you can always build on top of it, right? I mean, it's
exactly.
It can always be better.
Yeah, there are the foundations here for something even better, and it's just reaching out and connecting as many people as possible to really, really make it the best it could possibly be.
Mm-hmm. And I guess that's why it's so amazing that you guys are doing it. You're contributing to the community and hopefully building more of the scene and the exposure, I guess, and just conversations.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And how yourself did you get involved with Savon Radio? How did you hear about it?
I've actually done a couple of projects with Mark Brand, who is the leader of this gang, and although I work in animation, I do quite a lot of traditional art, so we worked on some projects where I created paintings for Portside, actually here in Vancouver, and I started thinking of this idea for a podcast just because I feel like there's so many incredible artists in Vancouver, but it doesn't feel like there's enough conversations going around them. They're not well known. Some of them don't know each other, even though they're so talented. Like, and I was hoping that this could be a little step towards bridging people together. And I don't know if I'm great at it, but because I don't see this kind of movement accelerating, I really wanted to contribute to it. And I actually started recording a couple of shows myself, but then I saw Mark Brand on Instagram saying, hey, I'm starting a digital radio station. And before I released any of my shows, I was like, wow, this seems exactly what I wanted to do. And I reached out to him, and turned out this magic thing was being built. And so I'm just incredibly lucky, I guess, right place, right time, got into it.
Definitely. I didn't hear about this until my editor at Beatroom Magazine, Glenn Alderson, told me about the fact that Mark had this going, and Jaden sadly cannot be here for our first taped episode.
We'll miss you, Jaden.
We miss you. We miss you. Please come back.
Cleveland.
He's in Cleveland right
now.
He's
ridiculous.
Crying with all the Browns fans.
I hope he's listening.
Yeah. He's here in spirit. But anyhow, yeah, we really heard about it through just one of my connections, so it's been fantastic.
And how did it go from there? Did you just reach out? Or?
Yeah, we reached out to Mark, and we had a meeting here. That must have been in the summer, because really, you know, the seeds were germinated then, mm-hmm. and then it's just been, you know.
It's really incredible. I don't know how all of this is now happening. Do you know what I mean? Because if you guys were here during the summer, you... Studio was not here.
Not even close. No.
It's like you said, the beginnings. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's quite beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wasn't around for that part of it yet. Mm-hmm. Was it October?
Yeah.
And they invited me in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
But even then, it was still like early. Yeah. The guys worked here super hard to put this together.
That's a super nice studio. And it's a fun view.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes a little distracting, actually. So as we're doing the show, some people are like waving for people listening. We're facing Hastings Street, and there's windows. We're on the first floor, so it's kind of cool. There's people to look at. There's some audience, but definitely can be distracting, especially mm-hmm. if you hear those sirens. That's why.
Yeah. Comes with the territory.
Yeah,
for sure. So in art, what's your background, sort of?
Good question, yeah.
Went to the Vancouver Art Institute?
Yeah. Man, you know everything.
Everything.
I always did drawing or sketching, painting when I was younger, but I considered it more seriously, you know, around grade 12, trying to figure out what is this life path going to be. A little scary. And I actually studied Art Institute. I studied animation, so moving cameras, characters, creating believable acting, whether it's CG or 2D animation. But eventually, the love for drawing and painting overtook, you can say, and so I transitioned to concept art and design, which is in the same industry, but now instead of moving, like animating, I create designs, visuals for characters, environments, props. It could be anything. Mm-hmm. So that's been like a kind of in a short answer, the path to get here.
Mm.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Any notable projects you've contributed to? Has it been like commercials? Has been any films that people would recognize?
Hopefully you guys are going to love one of the projects. So when I worked in TV animation, honestly, I don't know if you watch cartoons, but I worked on, I'll just name them, Rated A for Awesome was a cartoon on Disney Channel. I worked on Hot Wheels animation, Max Steel. And then after I moved into games, and actually the crazy part, I honestly never knew this would happen. I worked on a mobile game called Iron Maiden Legacy of the Beast, a game for... Iron Maiden.
That's how awesome.
Crazy is that? But the craziest part is that when the game launched, the band visited the studio and we got to hang out with them. Like, and then we went to the show. Honestly, like, it doesn't make sense, but that's one of the projects. And honestly, that was super fun. So.
That's amazing.
Who knew?
Yeah, I've seen, I love Maiden. I've seen them twice. I'd totally geek out if I was in the presence of like any of them.
Yeah, yes. But because they're just cool dudes. So,
oh yeah, Bruce Dickinson especially. That guy just does everything. He fences professionally, like he said. He competes with fencing, and he's like a pilot.
Wow.
He flies
the
band jet.
Mm-hmm. It's inspiring. There's some people who are just like next level, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Iron Maiden kind of has that like established kind of art style with like Eddie and all that. How did that feel, kind of?
And that was the cool part, is that we had to be you study the artwork, because Eddie is the mascot. Eddie is the face of the band, and so the game actually follows Eddie, and they got writers to create a bigger narrative for him. And so as we worked on the game, my job was to try to recreate the worlds that are actually covered. So you look at one picture and try to imagine, how do we make into this into a bigger world? And the cool thing about Maiden, their storytelling. So they create this world, so when you listen to it, you can really imagine it. So kind of all that combined was given to us at the studio called Roadhouse Interactive, and we just had to create it. Honestly, it was a really cool project to be a part of, and just visualizing those things it was an honor, because I knew how much of a legacy that was there. It's actually, once again, scary because of the pressure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, especially with all the different variations of Eddie, you're looking at like 20 plus versions of the same character that you have to work with, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
All right. So I understand you did some murals.
Yes, sir.
Can we talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Thanks to my studio mates, and I share a fine art studio space with a bunch of local artists. The first mural I did was with them, Andrew Young being the leader. In fact, Andrew Young also is going to have a show called Snackcast, and him and I are going to be alternating, so he kind of ties into this story. But he asked me if we want to just collaborate on a wall, and it was really scary because I keep using this word, but it was intimidating because the wall, you know, it's 20 feet high, and just go paint it just because. Yeah. And having never done this, as you know, any big challenge is, can we even do it? And I'm so glad I didn't back out because I was close to backing out. And once I did it, it was exhilarating and a little addicting, just because when you create normal work, you're either waiting for a gallery, so to put it out to for people to see, because art is not exactly complete until someone sees it. I imagine just like in music, you know, you want to create a song, you want people to experience it. Until you put it out there, it doesn't feel complete, while with murals, you create it and it's out there and people can have a response to it, and it feels complete. It feels like a piece that's a one-off, so there's less pressure from there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make it too long of a story, but so after having done that one, I think I got addicted, so I reached out to the city of Vancouver and did a number of them throughout the city, and it was really cool to see Vancouver Mural Festival be created over the last couple of years, and I was lucky enough to be involved in that. So it's exciting to see culture and art continue being spread throughout Vancouver. And, I mean, you guys, I don't know if you went there, but also a lot of live music, right? Live shows during that time as well.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance. I didn't have a chance to check it out. I think I was out of town at the time, but it looked really, really
cool.
But
overall, I think we can all be happy to see the direction. Hopefully, you know, there's more spaces and places created for art, whether it's music or visuals.
Yeah, it's necessary.
Mm-hmm, very much so.
Condos are too, but art spaces I put a little bit more.
And I really hope there's more
cultural currency,
on it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, especially being an expensive city, you got to find areas for just to allow art to be created without too many obstacles that are not helping creativity. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, encourage it, not hinder it. More walls for murals, James.
There
so.
You go. Hopefully, if they let us.
Yeah.
That'd be actually a really cool idea if they somehow allowed that, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
do you have any guests that you're looking forward to bring on onto your show?
Oh, too many people. Let me think. Before this started, I made a list, and I think it's at least like 20, 30 names. And
Give us your top three.
Okay. I really want to get Yusuf Mapara, who is an art director. I worked with him in games, and he's just an incredibly talented guy and really humble. I want to make sure I get Peter Reek, who's like, I don't know, local legend, incredible, multi-talented guy, you know, from movies to bands to comic books. He's just incredible. Honestly, I really want to talk to him. There's got to be a lot to learn from, just the time management. And let's see, number three, let's get let's get Andrew Young in here too. The guy has been pushing the art scene in Vancouver so much, and I'm really excited to see where he keeps going with it. But he's I would love to dig his brain, I guess. Yeah. I hope I that's good.
Yeah, no, I got a kind of question about your show. It's about physical art. Do you see any like sort of hard times with not being able
audio.
To see anything?
Yeah, very, very good question. We'll see if we're going to get some cameras in here. I hope it's not a obstacle. I always want to make sure, you know, shout out the Instagrams and websites, but I hope that the conversations don't rely heavily on visuals rather than on personal experiences, journeys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that that will be my emphasis. And I know there's actually a couple of shows online where they specifically focus on technique and the creation of visual art, where I purposely want the show, want the creative theory to be focused on life and journey as an artist, just because I think there's a lot of material on how to draw, but what about everything else about this life that you can choose to live? It can be hard and fulfilling, but the journeys are interesting.
Yeah. Sorry, we just got a...
We got more people coming in.
Yeah, yeah, our next guest, Mark, coming in.
It's lively in here.
Yes.
Yeah. So you have to go for your dad's birthday?
Yes, sir. Yeah, yes. I'm sorry, guys. I got to run, but I think you guys... Yeah.
Thank you for coming on. This was a lot of fun.
Thank you. Absolutely. I really appreciate it. Can't wait to listen to it. And the fact that you're bringing local bands in here, I'm overall, love music, all genres, so this is going to be cool to listen to, so I hope everyone tunes in. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. All right, thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Ilya from Creative Theory. So, before we bring on our next guest, we are going to play our featured single of the week. This is by local indie pop band Wynonna Forever. They just dropped their new single Heads and Tails on Heads or Tails, actually. Heads or Tails on this past Friday, January 19th. They played show at 333 with Club Sofa and Shway, and they released a music video the same day.
Wow.
So without
busy day.
Yeah, busy day for those guys. So without further ado, this is Heads or Tails.
Okay. That was Wynonna Forever with their new single, Heads and Tails. Heads or Tails?
Heads or Tails.
Heads or Tails.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. What do you think of that song? I like it.
I think it's great. I haven't had a chance to watch the video yet, but...
Yeah, I mean, first listen to that song, I didn't really feel it.
It's definitely... The instrumentation's definitely different from their previous stuff. Mm-hmm. Most of their stuff so far has been largely guitar-driven, so it's interesting to hear some additional stuff. I think we're hearing some sax, at the very least.
Yeah, no, it's definitely...
Baritone or something like that.
Definitely. Second listen, I was really into it.
Yeah.
First listen was just kind of trying to listen to it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
First listen was to listen to it.
Second listen
was to really listen to it.
Yeah. All right, so, current news. Do you have a news song that you're going to just sing for us, James?
A new song?
Yeah.
This is the current news.
Current news. Okay, so, there's a former strip club in Surrey. It's being
an infamous former strip club in Surrey.
Super infamous. The Bird Exotic Show Lounge is being transformed into a art hub slash live music venue. That's pretty neat. You used to live by there.
I used to, yeah. The Flamingo's the other business attached to it, so now the Flamingo is going to be completely rebranded as a live music venue. In fact, I think they've started to play shows there, or they're starting very soon.
Yeah, I think they started about a week ago with some local bands, and what's really cool about this project is that they're really focusing more on the artists and the fans than making a project right now. It's like a community, hey, Surrey has music too kind of thing.
I read over their article written by Johnny Pappen, who I run the same circles as him with Beatroot Magazine. He runs the metal punk section. And one of the things that I really liked reading in the article was that 100% of the profits goes directly to the artists, which is important. It sounds, based off what I've read, the people that are behind turning the Flamingo into a live music venue are really devoted to having a designated awesome space for local bands. In fact, my band might play there because most of my bandmates live in Surrey, so why not?
Definitely, and I think it's really important to people to go because 5 to 6 years from now they're going to tear it all down. High rises are going to go up.
Yep.
But basically, if it's successful and people go, they're going to install new art venues there,
which is great. Which is needed.
Not successful, they're going to be like, no point. So
we want to see it succeed.
SkyTrain away. Wally is a terrific area, just to walk around at night in, and enjoy. Definitely. I mean, there's no strip club there anymore, so
yeah.
What's going to happen? You have a story.
Yeah, I do. So I noticed this in the Georgia Strait. It's the headline's a little pessimistic, and we'll get to that. The headline is, a sad South by Southwest showing leaves one wondering if Vancouver's pricing out its indie musicians. The article basically talks about how out of all the Canadian bands
all the artists that are going to South by Southwest,
all the Canadian artists, only three bands are going. And what the article more broadly talks about is how there have been a number of West Coast artists who originally from Vancouver that have decided to leave the city, citing rent, citing, you know, the costs associated with rental fees for art spaces and for practice studios and jam spaces.
Yeah, lots of places closing down.
Yeah, I mean, the article itself is pretty doom and gloom. And the challenge I had with that is like, okay, yes, it's, you know, there are things that need to be improved. But
it's in a transition phase right now.
It's more about, well, what can be done to combat it rather than just saying, oh, you know, look, only three Vancouver artists.
Yeah, so the three Vancouver artists are De Rouge, Said the Whale, and Wirespine.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard of Wirespine.
Me neither, but they must be good if they're able to go to South by Southwest.
Yeah. Meanwhile, 11 bands from Montreal, 11 bands from Toronto.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's good. It's just
lots of Canadian people going down there. That's going to be lots of lights going on outside.
Yes.
Okay, and
the last story we have is a little bit of a bummer. Dolores O'Riordan, and I hope I didn't mispronounce her last name. Apologies if I did. From the Cranberries, passed away at the age of 46 this past week.
Yeah.
The Cranberries were a lot bigger in the... What was that?
Oh, you were just loud.
Was I peeking a bit? Okay. Yeah. Cranberries were pretty significant Irish band in the early 90s. From what I recall, they were a lot bigger in Europe than they were overseas, but they had a number of hits in North America, including Zombie, Linger, and Dreams. And she had a really unique voice, and it's sad to see her pass away so prematurely.
Yeah, it's really sad. And now to get out of the sad news bit.
Rest in peace, Dolores.
Rest in peace.
And
we have some concert listings.
It's
going to be... There's a lot of cool shows going on this week, and we're going to tell you about them.
Yeah, so the first one we have up is Mulk and Miss Mudd are opening for Number at the Cobalt on January 23rd. Hailing originally from Abbotsford, Mulk are a scrappy crew that blends 60s and 80s influences, Velvet Underground, Pixies, stuff like that. It's really, really great stuff. Miss Mutter, a fairly new band, but based on their Instagram, they sound like a really rad all-girl grunge band. You want to do the next one, Travis?
I would love to do the next one. You got Petunia and the Vipers opening up for the Flesh Eaters at the Rickshaw on January 25th. Petunia and the Vipers defy genres with their eclectic mix of rockabilly, swing, ragtime, blues, country, and everything in between.
Next one we have is the Hollow Twin EP release show with Little Crew and Porto at the Biltmore Cabaret, January 26th. Hollow Twin are a dark folk band fronted by Emily Watts and Becky Wask. Little Crow are an alternative indie band that draws influence from Daughter, L. King, and Jin Wigmore, and Porto is an indie folk band that blends jazz, folk, and electronic elements to create open soundscapes. Sounds like a really cool show.
Okay. And then you also have James T. Kirk's and Anthems and Fashionism at the Cobalt, Saturday, January 27th. That sounds like a pretty fun show.
Yeah.
Yeah. James T. Kirk's, they're the three-piece instrumental rock trio. Anthem, drum and bass, hard rock two-piece, and fashionism, new wave, post-punk inspired crew with an eye for style.
Then we have Dustin Bentall opening for Matt Mays at the Commodore, January 27th. Then we have Air Stranger, which are a funk alt-rock band with few different bands at the Railway Stage, January 27th, with Faspa, Rachel Schroeder, and Gert Taberner, who's got an interesting background. He's a folk singer-songwriter from Germany originally, then Vancouver, now living in New York. So he still counts. I count him as local.
Yeah, it's local. It was local, and now it's kind of returned to localness. You got Swamp Folk playing at Gold Saucer Studio January 27th. And Swamp Folk's kind of this freak folk, roots, blues, avant-garde kind of throat-singing guy. So, and then you got some performance art and experimental electronic stuff going on there. It's going to be an interesting show.
That one sounds really unique.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one we have are the Unified, which are a funk soul pop ensemble that are playing at Guilt & Co. January 23rd. They're six piece, so I'd expect some horns.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And now, without further ado,
I'd like to introduce our featured guest for this episode. This is Mark Lingelbach. Mark is the brainchild of, Lamb's Breath is the brainchild of Mark. He's been putting out music under the Lamb's Breath name since 2012 and has worked with a number of collaborators, including various musicians, producers, and artists. His most recent album, Man Feelings, lists a dozen contributors in the credits. And I guess I'd describe Mark's sound as singularly catchy, an intricate blend of electronic jazz, fusion, and post-rock stylings.
Nice.
How's it going, Mark?
It's going pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Excited stuff.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on the radio web. Interwebs. Stellar.
Yes, the tubes. Internet radio.
Save on Meats.
Yeah. Save on Radio.
Save on Radio.
In Save on Meats.
Mm-hmm. In Save on Meats.
I think we're having our photo taken across the street right now.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So that's neat.
Yeah.
So
I'm just waving, and he's not waving back, so I don't think he's taking our photo anymore.
Mm.
Probably the sign.
Yeah. Okay. So, Mark Lingelbach.
Mark. Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Lingelbach.
I guess I'll take the lead here. So, we spoke before, I think it was in October, for episode 4 of the podcast, and in our previous interview you mentioned that your first band was called Snake Fetus. What was your experience like in that band? I had a chance to listen to MAP, the one song that you guys on
YouTube. Oh yeah, that one was called,
YouTube.
It was an acronym for Mexican Abortion Plan. I don't know.
It's a pretty interesting song, a lot heavier than your current stuff. But
yeah,
you know,
we were described as like progressive 80s band meets like a death metal kind of like Born of Osiris kind of shit. Snake Fetus was rad. That probably we made a lot of money in that band. As far as shows went, we just host our own and in cheap places. It was a lot of fun. Ooh, crap. It was all underage. I think I was playing shows at 17, and then I think we broke up before any of us turned 18.
And that was in Calgary?
Yeah, that was in Calgary, yeah.
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 Nice.
Snake Fetus was wild. Yeah. Every Thursday night, all of high school, I'd go to my buddy's house and we'd make music, and that was that.
So was it all DIY venues that you played, or?
Yeah, we used to play this community center called Shaganappy Hall. It was like this puny, it was smaller than Save on Meats here, and we'd just like pack it full of high school kids and just smoke weed and drink.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Did you wind up, you know, playing out of town at all or anything like that?
No, not with that band. No. Mm-mm. Yeah, we barely held it together as human beings. But
what led to the end of Snake Fetus? Did it get born? Was it no longer a fetus?
No, there's just endless like band drama.
Yeah, especially children. At like 17.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, money stuff and.
Yeah, and then this like, oh no, I'm going to graduate high school.
Yeah.
What now?
Yeah, totally. Whoa, what is going on?
Oh my gosh.
Oh no, there is a fight going on outside.
Is that a guy or beating another guy? Damn.
Wow.
Holy crap.
Now he's just walking away.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Snake Beast.
Yeah, totally, yeah. Yeah. Whoa.
That was heavy.
Yeah. That was heavy.
I guess back on track, did you having to move also contribute to the breakup of that band? Or?
No, I actually stayed. I was going to go to school right after. I was going to go to secondary school right after high school.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to do the band thing. But we broke up right before high school ended.
Ah.
And then I just worked and traveled and shit. And stuff.
Yeah, where'd you travel?
I went to Europe.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was fun.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Where in Europe? Just
It was like 10 countries or something. It was like all kind of Western Europe.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, did you organize that yourself or like a travel?
No, just me
thing?
And a buddy
yeah?
Bought a one-way ticket to England and then that was our only plan, cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and we bought one of those Euro train passes, so you can just go forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can have, like, 4 different countries in a single day.
Well, yeah, I didn't do that. I mean, maybe travel through, but not enjoy for. Yeah.
Okay. Where are we interview-wise? What are we talking about?
Well,
I got distracted.
That's okay.
Yeah, me too.
Kind of the nature of it. In preparation for the interview, I made a point of going back and listening to pretty much every record you've released.
Nice.
Yeah, starting with These Days.
He has a few complaints.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I'll just, yeah, totally.
Yeah, mixing on the drums, like, the snare sounds awful.
No, yeah,
no, I'm kidding.
It's probably true.
So how did that record come together, and what inspired you to write in this kind of lo-fi electronic headspace? It really stands out as opposed to the stuff that came out later in your career.
I mean,
you don't really introduce guitars until the end of the record, so it seems like... Was that the first thing you released since you left Snakes, or since...
Well, Lambsworth started when I was in high school in grade 10 or 11 alongside Snake Fetus. It was just like my solo project.
Yeah.
So on top of everything you found on Bandcamp, I probably have like 10 other albums that I did in high school. And they're real lo-fi.
Oh boy.
Like, I had one that was recorded on a loop pedal.
But
that's why These Days is more lo-fi, is because it was just older. I wrote that record while I was going to audio engineering school.
Yeah. Did you record it while you were going through school as well, like at those studios?
To be honest, I didn't really use the studio too much at school. It's like, it had stupid increments of time. It was like 4-hour periods.
Mm.
It was just easier to work in my own space. Yeah, I'd use like school synthesizers and school programs.
Yeah.
And they're like computer labs a lot more. Yeah.
Like to mix stuff and
stuff
like that.
Yeah, and to add samples that I didn't own.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you had your own home recording studio? That was actually where we recorded episode 4.
Yeah, I had an HD16, which is a Zoom recording device, back in... I bought it In grade 11 or 10, somewhere around there, probably 11. And so I was recording in that all through high school. It was a home studio, but a very bad one. And then I moved to Vancouver, and over the course of 3 or 4 years, I kind of built up my studio. Mm-hmm. Now it's pretty all right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Must be handy being able to record, you know, just put down ideas as you encounter them.
Yeah, I've kind of like made it so I can record all of my music in headphones nowadays. Mm-hmm. I do all the guitars and everything just plugged in, and then I'll reamp it after. A big thing with like at the school using studio time is like you got to be in the zone to make art, and I want, you know, if I'm in the zone, I don't want it to end. And I want it to be whenever I want it to be. You know, it's good so I can be at home, make my music while I'm comfortable. You know? Yeah, yeah. It's nice having that. I feel bad for people who have to pay a lot of money for a day and have that whole stress.
Yeah, you're certainly blessed, for sure. Have you considered opening it up to friends to record stuff? Or is it largely just been
I have recorded other people.
Okay.
I'm at this point where I'll record you if I'm a part of the project, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the money. No one wants to throw down the money it's going to take me. And,
yeah.
And I could make more money doing nothing, almost. Like,
yeah.
Like, yeah. Freaking, if I'm getting paid $10 an hour at some place, like sitting there, I'm making more than I am in a studio, you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty brutal nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the really, really good people will work 10 hours a day and bring home $250, you know, at bigger studios.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's normal people who record local bands. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm nice. Sure if you're recording like AC/DC at the warehouse, you're getting paid more.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough right now.
Yeah. I mean, I was talking to, Stephen Drake from The Odds. And he said to record a record now, he'd get paid $3,000 to do what he would have been paid $300,000 back in the 80s, yeah.
Wow.
80s and 90s, yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely been a big change, especially music recordings, after the whole Napster.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, you know what I was also told? Is that the year Napster came out and MP3 downloads came out, CD sales went up.
Mm-hmm.
Because people would download music and then want to buy the album. But once lawsuits got involved and marketers started saying, we can promote this MP3 as a sale. And, you know, so Apple Music came out. And that's what they said killed it.
Yeah.
It's like once people thought that an MP3 was a high enough quality of music for them, and that, you know, it kind of just took the whole package away. And now it seems weird to pay for music, you know? It's like, I'm even don't want to pay for music.
Yeah. You know? Then also you got, like, Spotify, and you got streaming, you got YouTube.
Well, you're paying, like, what I would buy, like, half a CD back in the day, and you could listen to, like, 100 CDs on Spotify.
Yeah.
It's changing, and I like it. It's it means that people like me can make 2 or 3 albums in a year, you know, at home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's way cheaper to record, and there's pros and cons.
Yeah, definitely.
I always think that music's gonna, like, just evolve into the people's hands, you know, and, like, maybe big artists won't be a thing so much. That's why I think DJs are so big, because it's like, you don't go to a DJ to watch him spin records. You go to a DJ show to like dance, right?
Yeah.
And it's about you and not the artist.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's nice to have lots of that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are DJs that definitely put on a show. That's the whole part of it, but it's a guy standing there twisting some knobs, and I'm not downplaying what DJs do.
Yeah.
I'm just saying it's not exactly the same sort of show as seeing a band, but
yeah, and for the most part, it's not like rock star status. As much. I mean, DJs are, but I don't know.
It's different.
It's different, yeah.
It's like comparing rappers to rock stars.
Totally.
It's kind of hard to make a exact through line.
Yeah.
I'd say there's similarity in attitude of certain artists or certain styles of artists to each other, but it's different culturally, I feel.
But then there's always the crossover. You know, lots of
mixing
styles.
Linkin Parking it up.
I mean, you're on the turntables right now. So.
Yeah, ricka dicka dicka dicka. Yeah.
So, before we move on, do you want to play us a song?
On the guitar?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Sure can do. I'll just use the one mic.
Yeah, the guitar should get picked up pretty good on the...
Okay.
Feel it out.
There we go. Bada bacow cow. All right. Just go for it, eh?
Yep. Play whatever you want.
Losing your ground. Let your hands slip out of place. No time can erase the past. And I'm afraid, and I'm worried, and I don't know where I'm going, but I hurry. Cause how you do what you do to me. Oh, drives me mad. The river refuses no stream. The river refuses no stream. Up the pieces you left behind, looking for the words I can't seem to find. Do say I'm afraid and I'm worried. I don't know where I'm going, but I hurry. And all this haste creates waste. Cause how you do anything is how you do everything. Oh Lord. Now you do anything is how you do everything.
Great.
Yeah, I like that quite a bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
So what song was that?
It's called The River.
Is it on any of your albums currently, or is that a new one?
It's on Lamb's Breath album, self-titled.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Your one from 2016.
Yeah, I think yeah. so, yeah. For, yep.
Yeah, I liked it.
Thanks.
I enjoy the guitar playing and the singing in combination with each other.
Nice. Yeah,
very good.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So what's that song about?
Have you ever seen the movie Waking Life?
What's it about?
It's it's an like an existential journey kind of movie. It's about it's all animated, and it's about this kid who has these like deep conversations with people, and it's just like each person's like.
I think I might have heard about that. Did they use the rotoscoping like animation technique over?
Is
everybody?
That where? Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's like
okay, like a like a Scanner Darkly. That's another movie
totally,
that did that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah. And well, in it, there's this one character who like drives a car that looks like a boat, and he's just talking about like, just go with the flow. Like the river refuses no stream. Like I just enjoy my life, kind of shit. It's kind of about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a breakup song about like, oh shit, just happens.
Yeah. Well, your most recent album was composed of a lot of breakup songs.
Well, what are you gonna do?
Mm-hmm. So by and large, how much of the Lamb's Breath discography has been a self-curated process, and how much of it has been collaborative? Like with your first album, was that all you recording everything yourself? Or?
In these days? Or I've done it's a shitload of just me by myself. I'd say like 80% or so. Something high like that. I get my buddy Max Huberdeau. He's collaborated a ton on drums all over the place, on almost every album going back. I don't know. It's like a lot of it is like my songs that people add to, you know? Man Feelings was probably like one of the most collaborative albums. I did an album actually before that never got mixed, but it got fully recorded. That was pretty collaborative as well.
Yeah.
Are you planning on releasing that one at any point? Or
no, I don't know. I don't really feel like mixing it.
A lost album.
Yeah, maybe one day.
It's not lost, it's on his computer.
Yeah, it's there, chilling on a hard drive.
It's funny you mentioned Max Huberdeau, because I noticed in the Shawing Street? Yeah, Shawing City. Which album was that?
Shawing City?
Shawing City.
Shawing!
Shawing
like
City?
Shawing!
Yeah, so that record. Max Huberdeau gets a lot of cred on that. Was he
some of those songs he just straight up wrote.
Okay.
And I just sang on them.
Hmm.
And I recorded him and mixed it, but... Yeah.
So kind of moving forward, just, you know, I really noticed a lot with the first three releases that you dropped. The production improved pretty noticeably on Dreaming Out Loud, your second release.
Yeah.
Like, did you work with anyone to record that one, or was it just your improvement?
That was the last project I did in school.
Okay.
Like that album. One of the teachers, Adam Fulton, helped me mix it a bit.
Mm-hmm. I also noticed there's no proper album cover for that record.
Oh yeah, there is, and I just didn't do it. Yeah, Lamb's Breath is always just a side project for so long. I didn't start doing live shows till about 2015.
So by and large, it's been mostly a bedroom project.
Just to blow off some steam.
Now, when it comes to that, were you just finding that it was hard to keep a stable live lineup, or was it just something that you hadn't considered until the last 2 years?
Well, I just always was in bands, and it felt like selfish to do my own band. But as you get older, it's just like, whatever.
Yeah. All right. You have a live show coming up pretty... soon?
Mm-hmm. February 10th.
February 10th?
Yeah. I'm actually playing a shoe store this week, just an acoustic gig. But I think it's like closed. It's just for some.
Yeah. Just for the shoe people.
Just for the shoe people.
Yeah. Just for the
shoe
shoes.
Enthusiasts or something. Yeah. But February 10th at the Toast Collective on Kingsway with Pre-Purity, which is a really rad band, and Young Pilots. Yeah, it's their EP release and their first show.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I think I listened to their whole EP. It's like five songs. It's really good.
Yeah.
It'll be sweet. It's going to be like kind of like chill stone vibes, electronic. All the bands have like electronic elements to them.
I've been to one Toast Collective show.
Yeah, me too.
It's very just packed.
One. It was so packed. Yeah. I like that though. When you're in the band, at least.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's like yeah. Well, that's how
you
do it. People.
You play. You play the tiny art spaces.
Yeah, I went to Stylo Records to see Pierce Kingan's new band, Munt, and it was packed as hell. I was like, it was actually kind of like too packed. Yeah, I didn't even go pee. I just left. Yeah, it was good. That band's really good.
Then your next record, kind of bouncing around here, we'll play some tracks at some point, but the next record that you did, The Joy and Suffering, yeah. Probably my favorite album cover.
Oh yeah,
the ones
yeah.
that you've released so far, and I'll just describe it for our listeners. It's a astronaut lamb who's floating through space but has been ripped in half, and he's kind of spying in agony because his guts are flailing all over the place in the void of space.
Yeah, I actually did a comic book based on that character.
That's the Lamb's Breath comic,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
Is that the end of the title character?
No. In the end, he packs himself up in a box and shoots himself into outer space.
I'm glad he added the in outer space at the end of that. Because yeah. it got sad.
Yeah.
Then it was happy.
Yeah.
Outer space.
Yeah, outer space.
Yeah.
Where anything can happen.
And with the Joy of Suffering, that was your first compilation.
Yeah,
record.
That was supposed to be like, that was a total compilation record. I think each song I did with a different artist. Or mm-hmm. something. I still had a lot of control on it. I kind of just like would message people and be like, yo, you're just going to record on this song I'm doing, kind of thing. Yeah.
And with that, was it everyone wrote their own tracks and you sang over them, or is it more like you're working together on stuff, or yeah. was it?
Yeah, more we work together. I wrote a lot of the stuff, and they just like add their own parts to it sometimes for a few of the bands, actually. Yeah.
How did you go about choosing the artists that you wanted to have on the compilation record?
I think with that one, it was just like my friends' bands, people who were good. My sister was one of them. Yeah, it's just friends mostly. Yeah.
Is there anyone that you really like working with?
Well, in that one, I worked with Ian Prince, and that was really sweet. And I really like my sister.
Yeah,
Party on High Street was rad. I worked with Alcatine on that album, who was like this band that Snake Fetus used to play shows with.
Mm-hmm.
Their lead singer actually got asked to sing with Stone Temple Pilots.
Really?
Yeah, and got flown
that
down
guy?
To, yeah, he got flown down to
what?
LA. He got flown down to LA and stayed with them for like a couple of weeks. And then they decided not to go.
Okay.
With them.
But well,
still,
I mean,
that's still sweet.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
still
that's,
amazing that he was
that
able
on
to
the
audition.
Resume,
yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Someone was like, I want to sing in your band.
Oh,
and
good.
I want to sing in Stone Pilots.
Good enough
so
for
like,
the band to at least fly him down to LA to try him out.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
that's pretty impressive.
I mean, in any case, very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool vacation.
Mm hmm.
Probably did a lot of drugs.
Maybe. I don't know.
He got stoned with the temple
bombs. Well, like, don't those guys do loads of drugs? Isn't that why the guy died?
Yeah, I don't know. This is all purely speculation, but I think most of the band's pretty clean now, because they're all in their, like, 40s and 50s, so...
I don't know,
and,
man.
You know, there's the tragic nature of Weiland's death, so I can't imagine they are dabbling in the same vices that ultimately wound up taking Scott
heroin,
from us.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd hope not. But yeah, I don't know. Still pretty crazy though, thinking of someone you know who's able to go down to LA to hang out with Stone Temple Pilots. It's pretty rad.
Yeah. Haven't seen him since he did it, but he did it.
Yeah. Have you considered releasing a second compilation record?
Not currently.
Mm.
Nope.
How about now?
Nope.
No? Still no?
No.
Hard
still
no.
No. Yeah. Hard no. Definitely no.
Okay. So I think we'll take a quick break and play a new song. Well, not a new song, but we'll play a song from the record we're talking about, The Joy and Suffering. This is My Family.
Oh, yeah, that was the one I did with my sister.
Thank you. joy, and unconditional love.
A song
that was my family. Okay, yes,
that was your family.
Yeah, no, that was the name of the song. It was My Family, featuring Mark's sister Dana.
D Ray.
Mm-hmm. Now this is a general thing. We'll get into this more and more and more as we play more and more of your stuff and hear you play some more of your stuff. But it seems to me, going through your discography, that you're never particularly married to a single sound.
Never been married.
Is that just simply because your interests are so broad when it comes to what sort of material you want to play? Because you shift and morph sometimes within the same song between like jazzy stuff to metal stuff to more atmospheric post-rock stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought that sticking to a genre means I gotta like follow a rule. I don't want to do that. I don't know. Yeah, my music taste has probably changed over time for sure. I used to really like metal a lot, and then less and less as time went on. I just think, well, it's like I want to do music my whole life. I'm not gonna just dial into one genre. I mean, I guess I could. That just sounds boring.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like people who do that more probably don't record themselves all the time. It's just like, I don't know. Like, I know people who will just, like, sit down and play guitar for, like, hours and hours, you know? And I don't do that as much. I just, like, record or, like, I write. I don't, like, just sit down. Yeah. And I don't even play covers or anything. I probably should.
When it comes to the songwriting process for you, is it, as you say, you're not one of those people that is inclined to just play for hours and hours. You usually have some sort of basic melodic idea, and then you kind of build from there, like piece by piece. Mm. Or does it come from some sort of like jam space where you're just like kind of walk me through kind of the process of assembling any song for you?
There's two general ways I write a song, and one is firstly on guitar. I'll just jam around on my acoustic guitar, write some chords and chord progressions, and then structure it out on the acoustic, and then I'll do a scratch acoustic track and then kind of form the whole song around it. The other way I do it is with sequences and programs, and I just make loops. And then I'll make a whole bunch of loops, and then I'll kind of roadmap the song out of these loops. As far as like finding melodies and stuff goes, I typically just like to have fun when I'm writing music, and like I'll like drink a couple beers, like get cozy.
Yeah.
It's like it's like a very enjoyable thing for me to be recording music. So yeah,
sounds kind of like the whole point, right?
Yeah, totally. As far as like finding melodies and stuff, I have my own melodies that I go to all the time. I'll find myself like in hitting the same chords on like almost every song. And then to escape that, I'll often try to mimic other songs. It's like, I don't know, we're at a day and age where it's like, fuck, you can steal a song. You can steal a structure. You could steal a melody. You just have to make it your own at the end of the day.
Yeah, I don't know enough about this, but do you hear about Radiohead trying to sue Lana Del Rey for releasing a song that apparently sounded very similar to Creep?
Oh, really?
Yeah, which I thought, thing is, I didn't look in, that's all I honestly really know about the story, but I kind of find that kind of find that funny because there's only so many chords and melodies.
Oh, yeah. My favorite was when TV on the Radio tried to sue for the millennial woo. Like the woo.
Oh.
Yeah.
That, yeah. The indie pop Volkswagen commercial.
Yeah, it's woo. Like what? Yeah. Oh, is that who they tried to sue?
I don't know who they... No. I was just making a general kind of joke about, you know, you hear that, that sort of thing, and, like, all sorts of commercials, like car commercials and stuff
and
like
that.
And
all kinds of, like, indie music.
Yeah. Too. Oh, and I'm not besmirching those artists that decide to sell their music to ad companies. Sometimes that's just... It's one way to pay the bills. But
yeah, Moss Mouse did it.
Yeah.
I saw Moss Mouse live once. I was unimpressed.
Yeah.
But I don't know, maybe bad day.
Yeah, I mean that happens.
Yeah.
Neil Young's played some poor shows.
He's performed some poor recordings.
That's true, yeah. Yeah.
When I first got into Neil Young, I was blown away. I was like, who, what? Like, who made this guy famous? But he grows on you for sure, Neil Young does. I was just like so confused. I thought it was like a joke.
Yeah.
I have an aunt that would probably kill you if you said anything negative about Neil Young. So.
Yeah. No, he's great. I mean, yeah. Did you hear about that one thing Neil Young did when he tried to make his own MP3 format, but it was like a high...
Wasn't he trying to make his own
MP3 player?
A high lossless
audio file. It's like his own file and his
own, MP3
player.
Oh, his
own file, okay. Yeah, so it was like instead of Wave, it would be his own file type.
Yeah.
And his own MP3 player.
His young file.
Yeah, it's like, who the fuck's gonna... I guess the artists would have to decide they're gonna release it on that file format, or just... Yeah. I don't know. Anyways, it flopped. Yeah.
I thought that was also built into Neil Young trying to release like his own MP3 player when that was still a thing, but...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's still a thing, isn't it?
The MP3 player that you tried to release? I don't know.
Oh, no. I just meant MP3 players in general.
Oh, yeah, they still are.
You can buy them still.
I think. Yeah. Well, yeah, you can, but I think Apple's on their way out.
Yeah.
With selling iPods, just because, you know.
They don't want them to sell them.
Well, people
they just want the phone.
Well, yeah.
Neil Young's product is called the Pomo. Pono.
Yeah, Pono.
The Pono.
The Pono.
Thanks, Jaden. Live from Cleveland.
Oh, perfect. Thank you, Jaden.
Nice. In Cleveland?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where our producer, Jaden, is right now.
Oh, nice.
Chilling out with those poor Browns fans.
Browns fans.
Yeah.
Sports.
Yeah. I watch the sports.
It's football Sunday, so.
I spurred hard.
Hence my Saints hat that no one can see on the radio.
I can see it. I'm on the radio, so.
Oh, burn.
Yeah, James.
Guys, anyway, watch Tallest Man on Earth. I mean, Last Man on
Earth. Yeah, I've been watching that on Netflix.
Yeah, I'm freaking in like Flynn right now.
Yeah.
Show's great. Anyways.
You kind of hate him, but at the same time, you like him because he's the main character.
Well, he's like Jim Carrey in like Dumb and Dumber. You're just like, oh my god, fuck. Yeah.
So it's pretty much the Omega Man, but it's a comedy. I guess. That's a really, really old reference.
What's
it's a Vincent Price movie. Oh, it's it served as the inspiration for that Will Smith movie. I'm trying to remember the name. The one where he's...
Bright?
No. The one where... Oh, I Am Legend. So Omega Man influenced I Am Legend because Omega Man's pretty much identical premise. In this case, it's Vincent Price is the last man on Earth, or so he thinks, because there's a vampire plague.
There's crazy. No zombies or vampires in the show.
Ah.
It just
what? I Am Legend?
No, I am Legend definitely has.
Yeah, there's no zombies or monsters. Just a disease.
Pretty sure
like
I Am Legend was just like a, hey, remember Shrek movie? Like, that's the whole point of that movie, is to get people into the Shrek sequels.
What movie?
I Am Legend?
It's why?
Oh, because of Shrek.
What?
Anyways.
How does that relate?
No, there's that scene in I Am Legend where he's the people and they're playing Shrek. Am I thinking of a different movie?
I think you're thinking of a completely different movie.
How do you play Shrek?
Will Smith is like playing
Shrek
on
his
DVD.
He's
like, what's, you don't like Shrek?
Oh.
And then there's the fourth, man feelings.
Yeah. Shrek's pretty tight. I've rewatched it this year.
Shrek the Third is probably the best one.
Yeah, which one's that? Oh, Shrek 2 was freaking fire.
Shrek 3 was awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's the fourth one.
I didn't even wind up seeing the fourth one. I was disappointed with the third.
I think I only watched the first and the second.
That's all you really need to
see. Boots is okay.
Yeah.
Mild. It's hard to believe that that's Wayne's World.
Yeah, I know. It was originally going to be Chris Farley.
Wow.
Didn't expect us to wind up talking about Trek. Anyhow. So, with all the records you've released, when it comes to, you know, you kind of have a revolving door of live players and collaborators. Has this been done more out of necessity or for the sake of variety?
I think... Well, it was what I wanted to do. It was what I really wanted to do before I did it. I think in a lot of ways it's out of necessity. I just, it's my music, it's my project, and, I don't know, it's just easier. It's easier this way. It's funner this way, it's a lot funner this way.
Mm-hmm.
People get less, I don't know, I was found when I'd artists, like, you have a point where they, like, peaked on them being stoked, and then, like, you know.
Yeah.
Then they get less stoked as time goes on.
So you find it's important to capture them at that peak, or you can recreate the peak when it's a short-term thing.
It seems to run a lot faster when I just, like, do it this way. I write all the songs myself. I, like, make sure I know how to do it live, and then I have options of, like, how many musicians I could have. Like, right now we're working... My next show, I think I got a mandolin player, a second guitar player, as well as the bass and drummer, which is normal. I might even have a sax player.
Ooh,
so
mandolin and sax.
Yeah, yeah. So we might just get rid of some of the backing tracks on a few of the songs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I run with those a lot.
Yeah, and I have to say, having seen you a few times, you do it pretty well.
Yeah, with the backing tracks?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's like, I was always, like, wary to throw those in, because it's like, oh, people didn't pay to watch my CD play, but I still bring a lot of that live element. There's, you know, all the singing's live, all the... It's got all you need.
Yeah,
That's something to watch on stage.
There's a fine line.
Yeah.
Of course. There's some things that you have to use backing tracks because you can't physically recreate it live, especially if you're a smaller artist.
Yeah.
Which is fine. I feel that it's kind of like CGI if it's used to augment a film.
Yeah.
That's fine, but if the film is reliant on special effects, or if your live performance is reliant on backing tracks, it's like...
Well, I've heard of some heavy metal bands that will play all backing tracks, and just, like, the drummer and bass player will play live, and everyone else just pretends.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that crazy?
That makes me sad.
Yeah. I mean, especially in that kind of genre, where it's like, yo...
Well, there's so much emphasis on technical
live,
capability,
and
being able to pull it off live. Yeah. I'm not going to name names, but there have been some bands that have really taken the heat for not being able to perform what they
claim
they can.
I saw Children of Bodom live, and they were, like, wasted. So.
Oh.
I've seen a lot of metal bands. I've seen a lot of bad shows.
Yeah.
Like, even, like, I don't know, I remember I saw Lamb of God once, and I was like... Never listening to this band again.
Oh,
and they're
no.
good. It was just like this one show was so bad. I was just like, I felt like everyone got less energetic when they came on.
Mm.
But this was years ago.
Yeah, I mean, that happens, though. Sometimes you see, one of the opener bands just blows the headliner out of the water.
Yeah.
Part of it might be just the local opener is just like, yeah, we're opening for these guys. Let's go. Let's do it. Let's kill it.
Turn our guitars on fire.
Yep. I saw Cocaine Mustache open up for CKY, and no offense to CKY, they were fine, but I thought Cocaine Mustache was the best band of the night because they were just...
So hype.
Oh, they were so hype.
Speaking of cocaine, heard about that guy in Power Clown?
No.
He got caught with, $7 million of cocaine in Japan.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, in his guitar case. I mean, street price, who knows how much it was. But yeah, he'll be in jail for 10 years, I guess.
Oh, dear. This is in Japan, right?
Yeah. Have you ever heard of Power Cologne?
Yes. I wanted to see them because I thought that was one of the most hilarious. To give people some background, Power Cologne are a Iron Maiden tribute band that dress up like clowns.
Mm-hmm. Good to know.
And, I really wanted to see them, but I guess that might be the end of Power Cologne.
Yeah.
That's sad to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, who knows?
Yeah. But kind of the nature of it.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's another clown that can play guitar.
Yeah, there's got to be another clown out there. Yeah. So
I guess shifting gears a bit, let's hear you play another song.
Okay.
Okay. What song are you going to play for us?
Shit. Oh, let me think about it. Play a really old one.
All right.
I can't remember what it's called. It's called Slippin'. It's from the self-titled album.
Yeah.
My head was in a mess, and I don't want to convey, yes. My heart was breaking up, but breaking over you, and I don't know, what should I do? Pleasure's on the end of my fingertips, I can taste it on your lips. The way you move those hips got me tantalized. My heart was all screwed up, couldn't give you any of my love. All these hopeless comments ain't doing me no good, so I keep my mouth shut like I should. Pleasure's on the end of your fingertips, I can taste it on your lips. The way you move those hips got me tantalized.
Right, so what's that song about?
I don't know. I kind of just made up the lyrics right now. Because I always change those ones a lot. But the actual song, I think it's probably just about time slipping away.
Into the future?
Yeah. I think that one was, I was in a relationship and it was like, winding down, and you're just like, oh shit. It's
like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kind of felt it coming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feel it coming.
That happens.
Yeah.
I'm arriving.
Oh, no. This is actually a question that Jaden messaged us for Mark. What's your gear setup?
My gear setup?
Yeah. What pedals do you use? What guitars do you use? All that fun stuff, all the gearhead stuff, because yeah. Jane's the gearhead out of all three of us.
Disappointing then for you.
Not for
me.
I
like my guitar amp, it's great. I'd like to get a little smaller one.
What sort of amp do you use?
It's a Fender DeVille. It's pretty good. I've got, for guitars, I've got this Epiphone kind of SG looking thing. It's an Epiphone Viper 500S.
Ooh, that sounds rad.
And I like painted a little Batman Beyond logo on it. It's tight. And then I got this Flying V. That's an Epiphone that I just bought from one of my drummers for like $250. It's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, for guitar pedals, I've got just like a Boss phaser, a Boss tuner, a Boss delay pedal, and a Boss chorus pedal.
You like your Boss?
Mm-hmm. I don't actually like Boss that much. It's just, I just have them. I do a lot of effects in my mixes too. But, yeah. I mean, live, I don't need too much besides delay and distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that ties into another question I had when it comes to, you know, you use samples, mm-hmm. not frequently, but often enough that it's noticeable with all your music. Where do you draw your samples from? I know some of them are, like, from TV and films. Like, do you just hear something in a movie and go, I want that?
Yeah, I mean, a lot less so than I used to. Now I'm kind of like, you can't really sell anything if you've got an illegal sample on.
That's
it.
True.
You can't really use it. So if I do sample something, it'll probably be like my buddy's cassette,
mm-hmm.
or some like really obscure recording, or there's a website called freesounds.org. And it's just sound heads who, like, go out and sample sounds all around the world. And then they upload them, and you're allowed to download them.
Mm.
Yeah. So I get a lot of shit from there. Explosions and, like, lakes next to lakes and, like, rivers and oceans. I like that shit.
Some of the dialogue samples that you've included, what have been some of the highlights for you?
Okay, are you talking about those ones off the, like, 1111 album and shit?
Yeah.
Okay, so a lot of those samples came from the last time I hung out with my grandpa, who was 99. I set up a microphone and we all just like hung out.
Oh,
so
wow.
A lot of the samples are from mm-hmm. that. Yeah, like my grandpa is at the beginning of that one song and he's like, four kinds of fruits. Yeah. And then there's my parents laughing with my auntie at the end of Papa Pill. And, at the beginning of 1111 is a bunch of samples from old songs that I recorded in high school.
Cool.
Yeah.
In fact, we have 1111, and we're going to play that for you right now.
Okay.
1111.
Sound.
right, that was 1111 by Lamb's Breath.
Off of the self-titled record from 2016.
You're listening to Pacific Sam Radio on Save on Meats.
Save on Radio.
Save on, Save Radio. On Radio.
In Save on Meats. In the front of Save on Meats. Yeah.
Pacific Radio. Pacific Radio.
Save on Pacific Sounds Radio Meat.
Pacific Radio.
So this ties...
Let me sample that.
It, when we were talking about your earlier releases earlier on in the program, you mentioned that you had been taking advantage of programs and tools that were at your disposal through recording school. What do you do now? Like, what's your setup when it comes to recording? We haven't touched on that yet.
Okay. I guess that's with gear, too. I should have
went Yeah, to. That's tied into that.
I've got the Apogee Ensemble, which has four Apogee mic pre's. Got two Neve mic pre's. They're what are they? The Porticos, and I've got a DBX 163 compressor that I also use as like a DI box for all of my guitar ends and bass end. I run out of Yamaha HS8 speakers, which are honestly too big for my room, but that's okay. And I just run it off a MacBook. I actually just bought an old MacBook 2010 laptop, real cheap, that I'm gonna record onto.
Yeah, well, I guess if you just like clear the disk space and just use it all for music stuff.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, and then I use Pro Tools. I bought the Machine Studio for sequencing and synths.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then. I actually just bought a crap load of samples from this one company that I haven't even delved into.
What sort of stuff?
It was samples of synths and drum machines, like early ones.
Oh, okay, cool. Like, the name escapes me. 808s and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. 808s and all kinds of stuff. It was like 40 gigs of zip files.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And then you open each one, and it's like 12 gigs.
Now, this ties into something that we also talked about earlier in terms of, you know, the landscape being so wildly different even 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you're able to have your own home recording studio, you're able to do all the mixing and mastering that you want on your own thanks to, you know, computers and being able to buy Pro Tools and stuff like that. Are you of the opinion that it's because bands don't have to spend as much money in the studio, they're able to if they have the resources to record on your own? Do you think that's just better for music in general?
I think so. It's kind of like how film has gone, where you see all these amazing independent films in the last few years.
Because,
like, suddenly people can do it. It's not all film. It's all, like, digital, which is way cheaper. I think... I remember seeing an interview with David Bowie about this, about how free music and, like, the future technologies will affect it. And David Bowie said something along the lines of it being a good thing, which I think so as well. So the question was, do I think it's a good thing that people can record easier?
Yeah,
I do. Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
There's just gonna be more music.
Yeah, like. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you're worried about, oh, now I gotta sift through tons of crap music to get good music, I don't find that.
I think that's
it's pretty easy to sift through, right? Yeah. And there's just so much good music being made every year now.
Oh yeah.
And artists just have control, you know, a lot more control.
I guess we'll kind of flip the question on its head a little bit. Do you feel that you'd be able to do what you want to do creatively if you were fully dependent on having to book studio time and heck, even having to sign with a record label?
I mean, in the sense that if I, like, signed with a record label and there was money backing me, I'd probably get more done just because people were interested.
Mm-hmm.
But If it's like just me now and I just would need the money to spend on a studio, that would prohibit me a lot.
Yeah.
I'd probably like draw more and play less music.
Oh, there you go.
And then it could be on Creative Theory with Ilya.
Ilya.
Right before us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you're still working on that comic book. That's something that you mentioned in our podcast episode.
Yeah. I'm actually coloring it right now.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Are you planning on making a soundtrack for that record?
I've decided, as well.
It's
going to be accompanied by an audiobook, and there's not going to be much dialogue in the comic book, so you kind of like won't get the story without the audio.
Mm.
Yeah.
Have you considered going the concept album route, where you could like make a whole album to accompany the
comic? I think I'd like to, and I might even do that with this. But what I kind of think I'd want to do, like, a live show with it, where it's, like, in behind you have the comic book playing.
Oh, that'd be cool.
And then you have, like, music and voice acting going on.
Yeah.
The voice acting would be, like, pre-recorded, probably.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm honestly surprised, because the best example I can think of as a comparison, that, like, Coheed and Cambria didn't do anything like that.
Yeah.
Because all of their music was based around the comic series that they didn't wind up finishing, so.
Yeah. That was sad.
Yeah. Well, they were able to get all the music done. They were able to complete the story with the music, but they weren't able to finish the
comic book.
The comic book, yeah.
It's going to pay for it. Did that band break up or something?
No, they're still around.
Oh, crazy.
They've kind of... Their most recent record was like their first that wasn't attached to any concept.
Oh, okay.
And, I didn't like it as much.
Okay.
Didn't seem to have the same grandiosity to it.
Grandiosity.
Yeah. I like that band.
Mm-hmm.
So... It's been a few months since your first interview, but you did mention that you're working on your first rap album. How is that coming along? Do you have a release date set for that?
Keep pushing it back. I actually started rapping with my buddy Dylan Kirby again, and we're like meeting up once a week if we can. So I think I'm going to kind of just work with that a little bit. The rap album's just kind of like my side thing for fun.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'll just drop it when I'm ready. I've got, like, it's all pretty much ready to go. I just have to finish up this one album cover, which I've already talked to the artists, and it's all rolling together. I kind of want to just have it there for when, if I ever do get some steam rolling behind me, I can just, like, boom, pop that out. Yeah.
Don't you have an album cover already kind of completed for that one as well? Is that the one with you as an astronaut, or is that for a different project?
That's for the album I'm releasing April 17th.
That's my birthday.
No, April 13th.
That's not my birthday.
Yeah I bought tickets to Carpenter Brut on your birthday. You should buy tickets to Carpenter Brut.
I just downloaded his new album to Spotify. I haven't listened to
really?
It yet.
Oh, really? I haven't listened to it either.
Yeah.
I fucking love Carpenter.
I will check him out because I'm curious. I haven't heard any of his stuff
before. Oh, wow. So. Yeah. Very good.
Good stuff?
Yeah, it's like synthwave.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's
I like that stuff.
Synthwave with like this like nostalgic 80s vibe.
That is very in right now.
Yeah, it's fucking... I guess all synthwave is nostalgic.
Yeah, I suppose so. Certain sounds.
But he's got like... It's like his whole spiel is kind of like B-movies from the 80s. With like lots of gore and violence.
That's awesome. So like, Carpenter,
yeah,
Root, kind of, like John Carpenter.
Yeah, like John Carpenter. That's what I thought he got.
Because the synth stuff in all the best John Carpenter movies is just just fire.
I saw
emoji.
The thing at the Rio.
Yeah.
When I just on like last day of January or something.
Oh man,
it's fucking awesome.
Oh, that movie's nuts.
When he puts the shockers on the heart
and then the chest opens up and then like snips his hands off.
Yeah, I was like frozen in my seat. I'm just like pushing back so hard.
Was that your first time seeing it?
It's awesome. I love the Rio.
My favorite gross out moment from that film is the same scene where the guy's head falls off and then it grows spider legs and scurries out of the room, and it's
I was so happy they killed it right away.
Yeah. Some of the best practical effects ever.
Mm-hmm.
And the dog, poor dog. That made me sad.
Yeah, those dogs got fucked up.
Yep. So, the new record's coming out in April, and it's not going to be a rap album. It's kind of going to be more in line with what you've traditionally been putting out as Lambsworth stuff.
Kind of jazzy. I do have a little bit of that synth wavy shit in there now.
Cool.
Yeah, this new song I've been working on. I'm trying to... I like my sets to have, like, really rockin' parts in it, too, because mm-hmm. that shit's so much fun to play. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
of
one
course.
Thing I noticed as I, like, kind of left the rock scene shows as much. Like, you just go and see these bands, and I swear to God, no one is having a better time than the band, you know? You're just like, this music isn't as fun mm-hmm. to listen to as it is to play.
Yeah.
You know?
And it should be this mutual,
yeah.
you
know. Mm-hmm. But I mean, bands like that, they don't change. Go very far.
You're talking more like the straightforward, like, hard rock sort of stuff?
Or punk, or, yeah. or like, even metal.
Yeah, I'd
or
be...
it's just, like, it's, like, so wankety-wank.
Yeah. I feel it really depends on the band.
Yeah.
But I get what you're saying, is that some of it is, like, at worst it can be really samey.
Yeah.
Or, like, really anemic.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen some techie bands, and it's just, yeah, the wheedly-woo just kind of, it's like, okay, yep. Wheedly woo.
Yeah.
For a half hour. Wheedly 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 woo.
Yeah. Slow down a minute yeah. so I can.
Let's have some dynamic range here.
Yeah. What do you guys think of Meshuggah? Speaking of no dynamic range.
I mean, I think Obzin's a great record, but they're not one of those bands that I can listen to consistently. Yeah. I feel a band that like that's does punishing in an interesting way that's like genuinely dynamic and jarring and like frightening is Rest in Peace Dillinger Escape Plan.
Okay.
I saw those guys play the Rickshaw and it was nuts.
Wait, did they break up?
Yeah, they did their final farewell stuff this past year.
Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, me too. And Greg Picciotto, lead vocalist, is now in a synth pop band.
Oh, cool.
Called The Black Queen, if you haven't heard any of that
is
stuff.
It good?
It's fantastic.
Nice. He's a good singer.
Oh, he has great range.
Yeah. It was a good band. I really liked, what was the one album? Machine, something?
Miss Machine.
Yeah, totally.
Miss yeah. Machine. I like One of Us is the Killer because it's a little bit more accessible, mm-hmm. or as accessible as it can be for a
Did
band.
Did you ever
like
listen
that.
To Genghis Throne?
No, I haven't heard
I
that
heard
band.
I heard one song from
They're fucking tight.
yeah. I need to check that
it's
out.
It's a really neat kind of electric metal kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They definitely honed in on something I enjoyed with their last album. And they did, after the album, I think they did two remix albums that I enjoyed. But leading up to it was real noisy kind of shit. Like,
is that how you spell that?
Tron. Oh, Tron.
Yes. Genghis Tron.
Like, instead of Con, Tron.
Mm-hmm. So, we're running out of time, but I'd love to hear one more song. I actually have a request for you to play on acoustic. Can you play Lover Don't Say?
Oh, that one's hard. It's just like... kind of weird on acoustic. I can try.
I mean, if you don't want to, you can
it's
play
just two
else,
chords, so it's really
oh, okay.
Boring.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Mm. All right, well, play what you want.
Mm. Okay.
Okay.
I'll do a new one.
Cool, yeah, play something from the upcoming record.
Upcoming, yes. I still don't have a name for the album.
Do you have a name for the song, at least?
This one's called Honeymoon.
Honeymoon.
Yeah.
Live. Premiere.
Okay, here we go. For real. Loving you is easier than breathing. And like the changes of the season, I got no control when this feeling takes hold of me. You make it easier to be myself. Ooh, I love you like I love nobody else. Loving you, whoa, is easier than breathing. Loving you, is easier than breathing. Yes, that's true. And when I wake up next to you, it's like I'm coming out of a dream. My dream is coming true. I got no control when this feeling takes hold of me. You make it easier to believe in the future. You like a suture to my wounds. It's good to be loved. Love to not use. Loving you. Oh, oh. It's easier than breathing. Loving you. Oh, oh. Is easier than breathing, yes, that's true. Loving you. Loving you is easier each and every day.
That was fantastic, as always.
You're welcome.
So, Mark, how can people like and follow you and figure out when your next show is?
Get me on Facebook. Facebook!
Woo!
Facebook! Lamb's Breath!
Lamb's Breath on Facebook. Do you have Twitter, Instagram, any of that stuff going on as well?
I've got Instagram as well. Not only does it follow my music career, it also follows my daily life and other things I do like.
So is it at Mark Lingleback or at Lamb's Breath?
Lamb's Breath. Wait, what do you mean at Lamb's Breath? What do you mean?
For Instagram.
Oh, yeah. It's just Lamb's Breath on Instagram.
Okay.
Yeah, totally at Lamb's Breath. Yeah.
Yeah.
At it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh, one question I did have. Are you, you mentioned that you are going to have a website up soon. Do you have a deadline for that?
No.
Okay.
No, these are slow up soons. In artist time. Up soonish.
So
I don't know. Do you go to bands' websites often?
Occasionally.
No.
No one does.
Not.
I feel like the only reason I'd have it is to like apply to festivals or something. I've had websites before, it's like fuck it. You know? might as well have Facebook. You know, people will go to Facebook.
You need Facebook, that's for sure.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It would be nice to have all my shit in one zone.
Mm. Hence the website.
Yeah, hence the website. Yeah.
Okay. And where can people listen to your music?
I have Man Feelings up on Spotify and iTunes. I have most of my music up on Bandcamp. And I've got a small selection up on SoundCloud.
And how can people watch your music videos? We didn't have time to get into that, but
I've got a couple of them on YouTube. One's called Salmon Arm. Actually, I think that's the only one.
It's also a video for Lover Don't Say.
Okay, yeah, a little one. Yeah, I've got a new video for Lover Don't Say being worked on by this my one friend. Whenever she gets it done, it's being done as a favor. So whenever she gets some time, and then I have two music videos finished that I got to put out. One's for the rap album. It's if anyone's ever heard of Kendama, it's this like I think it's an Asian, maybe Japanese game. I'm not really sure. It's kind of like a yo-yo type concept, except with a ball on a string and you try to like do little tricks and stuff. Anyways, it's like a video featuring that stuff and like this.
That's cool. I haven't heard of that before.
Yeah, it's really cool. No. It's pretty fun to play. It's like hacky sack, but like less annoying.
So it's a hacky sack yo-yo from Japan.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah,
that's intriguing.
A little trick game. I don't know.
Do you know what song that's going to be for?
It's for Heavy Baggage. Yeah.
Ah, cool. Yeah. Oh yeah,
it's already done. I watched it today. I was like, cool.
Nice.
Kids pull off cool tricks.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, I've got another one I filmed that I just have to edit.
And what song is that going to be for? Is that for the next Lamb's Breath album?
Lamb's Breath
The non-rap Lamb's Breath album. Surprised you aren't releasing the rap album under a different name. But
I know. Maybe I will. Who knows?
Yeah.
Probably not.
Lil Mark?
Yeah, LB.
Yeah, just get some Lamb's temporary
Breath
face tats.
LB, MCLB. LB, Lamb's Breath.
MCLB.
Yeah, LB.
There we go.
LB. Well, can people out there hear what we say?
I think. I'm not entirely sure.
Yet. I'm pretty sure they don't have
the speakers out there yet.
Okay.
I think that's something they're going to have in progress.
Yeah. Looking forward to when they have video going on here as well, because that's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So plenty in store for all you folks who are listening in for the first time.
Hell yeah.
So
yeah.
That's we're wrapping up. Travis, how can people follow us and keep up to date with what we're doing?
Well, you can follow us a lot of ways. We got Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, boom. We got Instagram, Pacific Sound Radio, boom. We got Twitter,
boom.
Pacific Radio.
Yeah.
We got the live show. You can listen to it on SaveOnRadio.com.
Boom.
You got the player on the homepage there. You got YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, and our website, PacificSoundRadio.com. We're going to have the podcast hosted there.
Yeah, so what we're going to do is there will be the live show, which you're listening to right now, and then all these will be archived, and we'll be uploading the podcast version on-demand archived episode in a few days after the conclusion of the live show, so you can listen to it if you had some sort of prior engagement interfering with that. So for all you fine folks, before we sign off, our next episode will be Sunday, January 28th, same time, 4 to 6 p.m., only on Save On Radio. Okay. Thank you. And all
right. Stay tuned for the freshest taking over for us next, I believe.
Yeah, and about
a minute ago.
About a minute ago. Okay. All right. Have a good night.